Are you developing IoT solutions? Get ready for tomorrow with Farnell, supporting your design journey from connecting smart sensors to the cloud to implementing AI. Find everything you need at farnell.com. Enjoy this episode with Farnell, a global distributor of electronic products and solutions.
So we're going to be discussing all sorts. My podcasts are fairly ad lib, and I have really, really good engineers come on. So I've got some fantastic engineers, and I'll introduce you to them in a minute. And we're going to be talking about how people can get into the renewable space. Obviously, there's going to be lots of engineers and installers here that are doing their gas or oil, you know, how they can get into this space. And we'll just see how it goes.
Brilliant. Well, I'm going to leave you in the very capable hands of Nathan and his friends here, and we'll enjoy it. And if you've got any questions, come along and ask him or anyone else in the panel. We're almost ready to go. I think we are ready to go. Yes, we are. Over to you.
So, welcome everyone to Beta Talk. As I just said, we are a podcast, and you can find us on all sort of podcast streams. I didn't actually know what a podcast was till about 3 years ago, till I started one. But we're on Apple Podcasts and Google and Spotify. And I've got some fantastic guests with us. So I've got Lisa, who Lisa's in the refrigeration sort of side of things. So anyone that's interested in heat pumps, heat pump is a very, very generic term. So there is lots and lots of heat pumps in this world. Anything that moves heat from an evaporator to a condenser is a heat pump. So that means that Costa coffee machine in the garage that you go to is a heat pump. The slush puppy machine is a heat pump. Heat pumps are everywhere. So the first thing to remember is don't get too scared of them. So Lisa works with some very, very big industrial stuff. We've then got two of my favourite engineers. We've got Steve from Norfolk, where I grew up. We've got Cy Poskett from the Bristol area. They design systems as well as install them. So I'm going to come to you, Lisa, first. So you are involved with sort of the big, big industrial stuff, aren't you?
Yeah, so I work on systems that are anything from, say, like 200 kilowatts to megawatts, like 2,000, 3,000 kilowatts, predominantly in food processing. But actually, heat pumps is a really big part of that these days. With our focus on decarbonising and reducing energy, heat pumps is the way forward for us in refrigeration as well as, you know, domestic heating. So it's quite an important part of what I do now.
So, I mean, when people go into a supermarket, they probably don't realise how many types of vapour compression systems there are. There's the chiller cabinets, the freezer, the storerooms, the cold rooms, all them metal shelvings in supermarkets. That's all using vapour compression technology, isn't it?
It is. And actually, even that, there's so many different technologies available. And some of the supermarkets have got freezers that are literally just plugged into a socket in the wall. And all of the energy from that, all the heat that's generated off the back of the refrigeration, they actually just throw that back into the store. So there's a lot of places that we are still wasting that energy, and that's the thing that we've got to really focus on now, is to move forward and to get them into like sort of main plants and utilising the heat that they're actually literally, like say, just chucking away.
So we'll probably come on to sort of the refrigerants that heat pumps are currently using. Now, I should imagine if you're in industrial, you're using mainly ammonia still, is that right?
We are, so predominantly ammonia. The ammonia is the primary refrigerant, and we use glycol as a secondary, so we're not pumping ammonia around workspaces. The plant and that is normally either situated in a building away from the main working area, or it's outside, so we're minimising the risks to the people working there, because obviously it is quite a corrosive, nasty refrigerant, but it's a really good refrigerant. The thermal properties of ammonia is fantastic. GWP of zero, ODP zero. So the limit of the damage to the environment is, you know, potentially it is a really good refrigerant. But actually, it's one that's been around for many, many years. And we've gone full circle, you know, back to the old technology, as it were.
Yeah. Steve, so you started out a long, 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 long time ago.
More years than we care to think, Nathan.
So you started off as a gas engineer, well, oil as well, maybe, because you're in Norfolk?
Yes, I'm second generation. My father started when he set out, was 1962. Went into the heating business. I've obviously followed on, two sons following on with me. We transferred about... Renewables started for me now just over 16 years ago. And we went full-time 2011. And, yeah, we had a little bit of a rough ride through government changes, policies, which I think most people are experienced who are in this industry. But now things have come good. It's become more and more widespread. And as you can tell from the buzz in the hall today, there is a lot of interest. The industry is changing fast. Lots and lots of new equipment coming through. It's quite an exciting time to be in this industry.
So when you started in 2011, sort of the renewable space, was it quite hard? Or was the customer base there?
Well, 2011 was when we'd made the jump full-time renewables, but we'd been building up for a few years before that. It was awful. Very, very little information, a lot of conflicting information. Equipment was very sparse. Now you can go into most merchants, a lot of specialist suppliers, and you can get all your equipment you need. It was sourcing all the time, and the internet wasn't as prevalent then. Engineers now work off this thing. We all know that. It wasn't available. So I'll tell you that back in the early days, we could find nothing, could we? Absolutely nothing.
And the technical advice was woeful, really, wasn't it? It was, yeah, lots of bad advice given.
Even those employed by the manufacturers.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, Sai, you're sort of the chief designer for Craig Brooks's. Was it Craig Brooks Plumbing and Heating, or?
Yeah, C. Brooks Plumbing and Heating, yeah.
Does Craig still do bathrooms and other sort of plumbing jobs, or has he mainly gone into heating now?
Currently, we still do boilers and bathrooms. We do the odd kitchen. Most of that's subbed out, but we're starting to incorporate that whole package, really, in a new build or whatever. So we'll do more things. We want to move away from bathrooms, but we're not quite there yet.
Does anyone here like doing bathrooms?
Sometimes better than doing a retrofit heat pump, to be fair.
So are you finding, obviously, I mean, I talk a little bit to Bristol City Council, and they're known as one of the sort of the local authorities that are really doing good stuff in this space. Are you finding in your area in Bristol there's a big emerging market for people wanting to have heat pumps in their homes?
Yeah, there's a real drive in Bristol at the moment. I think if you want to build something new, if you're putting renewable in, it's an easier ride to get get the planning, that kind of thing. I think there's a real drive for it in Bristol. It's a good spot to be, really, I think. Lots of rural around as well, so lots of oil, lots of LPG.
I mean, you mentioned planning there. When we look at the sort of social media, is this a big hurdle, planning permission for a heat pump, Steve?
There's quite a bit of conflict as well. Different areas. If you go to Wales, you'll have different rules to mainland England. Like, we've got a 1 metre boundary distance, things like that. Then you come under self-assessment for noise, and that can be very ambiguous. But then other areas overrule that for you. We've just recently done a project, and although it would have on paper passed all of the assessments, because the local authority had decided it was a slightly sensitive area, they clamped down on us in all ways. Some of it was totally illogical. When there's a house next door higher than the property we're working on, but they were restricting us in height on the PVT panels we're fitting, saying no, they can't be on the skyline. Right next door, you've got a house peering down at you. So it is hard, and I think a lot of that is a lack of knowledge.
Yeah, I think the planning thing's at least 10 years behind. They need to sort of move forward with where the tech's moved. You know, I think heat pumps are essentially silent these days, so it's most worry about the noise, isn't it, really? But inner cities are going to be a nightmare if you've still got to adhere to a 1 metre boundary. So I think things need to be relaxed a little bit if we're going to push this forward.
Lisa, you're in the commercial world. Now, obviously, these big buildings, as we know, even in cities, they've all got these external fan coil units. And do they have to go through a planning permission process?
They do, actually. And there's really quite strict levels for, you know, noise and sort of, you know, other pollutants that go into the environment. And actually, that has a massive impact on us at a design stage. And something that we talk about a lot is collaboration. You know, we all need to work together. And unfortunately, even at a design stage, that still isn't happening. So quite often we'll find, I don't know, so you've got like a new university or, you know, some sort of new commercial building, and the architect hasn't thought about how much space we need for cooling. And we then get like a postage stamp area, at which point we're saying, you know, you're going to have to be running this at full, you know, flat out to be getting the duty that you want from it. And then when we do that, we find that the noise levels are too high. So we get this sort of like in this perpetual circle of no one really wants to actually talk about this at the beginning, and it's always an afterthought. And then that's when we find the biggest impacts, actually, not only, you know, noise pollution, but actually sort of the energy that's consumed as well. Because when we're running fans and compressors at full pelt, they're really not at their most efficient. So it's, yeah, it's quite a complex situation, but we sound like we have the same issues.
It's exactly the same in the domestic, yeah.
One of the things that impacts on that and often isn't seen is the time and the expense of that time going for that planning, looking into how can you get that equipment installed. That process is expensive and people don't seem to understand that cost.
It's a very good point. So one of the things I get asked a lot is why are heat pumps expensive? And it's not the actual heat pump that's expensive. I mean, you can get 6 kilowatt machines for what, £1,800, I think you can get. I probably should mention names, but and then probably about £3,000 for 6 kilowatt. So it's, but it's the install that's expensive. And when you install one of these systems, there's a lot more stuff you're having to do. You're having to go there, survey the property, come away, design it. You're then having to procure all the equipment. I mean, like you said, it's a lot easier now than when you first started. But there's a whole remit of stuff you do in the background that the customer doesn't see you do. And the trouble is, they think they're paying us by the hour as soon as we turn up in the van, not realising there's a lot we do behind the scenes. I mean, are you finding customers are starting to understand that a little bit more, or do you think that's still a barrier?
I think we're quite lucky because we're fairly established. We've got a good customer base now, and mainly on recommendation, most of our customers, and I think they do understand that value. But it's perhaps the wider public who are looking to change from a fossil fuel, looking at the costs, and they can't understand where that differential is between replacing a gas boiler and installing a heat pump.
I mean, listen, you talked about the noise issue. I mean, we all know, like in domestic situations, that the heat pumps have got less noisier. I mean, I think we'd all agree. But there's actually a niche industry in the commercial industrial world, because there are companies that will go round and soundproof some of this equipment, isn't there? I mean, I don't know. I mean, we put the system in for Sam Studios for where Band Aid were recorded, and the company that did the soundproofing for the units charged more than what we did for putting the system in. Work that one out. So that's a lovely little niche industry. You know, if you don't want to actually get into installing heat pumps, just go and soundproof them in the commercial world. But do you have to deal with that, or is that sort of side you don't deal with? You're on the design and sort of troubleshooting side, I suppose, aren't you?
It is troubleshooting, but you have to remember when you're modifying a plant or a piece of equipment that will have an impact on the performance. So quite often you'll get a complaint about sound. So, you know, our plant is on the roof and it is in an open space, and if it's close to a residential area, people will moan. But by boxing that in, you're reducing the airflow to the equipment, and then comes another problem. So people often go, oh yeah, we'll just build a wall here, or we'll put some louvers up, and they don't think about the impact on the performance. And you know, that has an impact on the energy as well, because if you're reducing the airflow to the unit, you're going to need to run the fans faster to try and draw more air through. And that you know, there's so many variables and things that need to be thought about on the design side.
So if a company is listening and they want to get into renewables and they think there's a market now sort of establishing for them, what are the first things they do? What should they actually be doing and thinking about first?
An installation company?
Yeah, so whether it's a sole trade or a little small MSE, they think, right, heat pumps looks like it's here to stay. Because we were all there 15 years ago, weren't we, being told this, and of course it never really sort of took off. But some people now think, oh, this is the direction we want to go. What are the first things they should do or can do?
I would say try and get an install one, you know, try and get a job where one of your trusted customers wants to do a job and do that. Put one in your own house, learn about system design, flow, and that kind of thing, emitter design, and go from there.
I think personally, I'd say align yourself into the industry. It isn't a dog-eat-dog world here. We're all trying to support each other, and everybody will freely give you information. Get online. We're all talking on Twitter. That's quite a common thing. I think a lot of people have learned quite a lot of knowledge from there, haven't we? And another big thing, align yourself with a company. They will provide you the information and the backup you need. Because what they don't want is a poor installation. They want a quality installation, a happy customer, another recommendation. It's all about sales. At the end of the day, we're all trying to make a profit. That's not a dirty word. But don't go in blind. Give yourself a problem. I'm not saying there won't be mistakes, but as we know, there's no mistakes, only lessons. As long as you put them right.
So, I mean, for me personally, I would recommend asking to partner with somebody. So, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get. Why not find somebody? It's a reputable installer, and ask them, could I shadow you? And like you say, there's plenty of work for everybody. We've got, 600,000 heat pumps to install. So it's not like there's a shortage of work. So take that experience. And like you say, also the manufacturers, a lot of them run free training. So take the opportunities and take the training.
We all learn from each other, don't we? There's always another lesson to be learned. Always.
And it's a definitely a kind of job that's not for a one-man band either, because you definitely need a mate to lift those radiators, lift that heat pump into place, that kind of thing. So, yeah, team together with another installer or shadow somebody else.
Yeah, installers will be struggling for hands, won't they?
We're always struggling for decent labour, yeah.
Yeah. So they'll snatch you up. They'll be happy for you to take the knowledge. I think we're all driving in the same direction. Manufacturers, installers, everybody wants the same outcome.
So we're definitely saying this is, because as we know, you know, our industry is mainly a sole trader industry. I think 86% of everyone working in this industry is a sole trader. So are we saying it's going to be very, very hard for them to stay a sole trader, or could they just employ labour on the day? Like, let's say they want to lift some equipment, they can employ labour on the day. Obviously, in big cities, that seems to be a bit easier than where we're from, Steve. But
I think there's probably a lot of room for cooperatives. So two or three installers, when one gets the job, the three go, complete that installation, move on to the next, and become a tight-knit team.
So arguably, the whole industry is in this massive transition period. So it's not just about the technology. I mean, as Lisa and I, the technology's been there for donkey's years, like decades and decades. But the actual industry and how we work with the industry is shifting.
Definitely a sea change coming, definitely. The old industry, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way at all, but we've all got that name of combi slingers now, haven't we? And the days of a quick hit in and out, they're going. Jobs are long term now. And there's a lot of investment in time. The job's got to be right. You've got to meet standards. Everybody's watching that installation now.
Well, you coined the term the three F's, I think, so, haven't you? Which is fit, fire, and then
fill fire and
fill fire
and fly away.
So we're, and that is part of our industry. And now I always try and, you know, there's engineers that we know. You know, I've got good friends that can put boilers on a wall with 2 hours and it's sod off. And in some ways, it's not their fault that our industry ended up like this, where they can do that. And actually, customers expect them to do that, because a customer, when they see a quote, if someone wants to go in and do a full day's clean, then they do a full day survey, then do a commission after it, and they look at your quote, they're going to think, well, Joe Bloggs down the road does it for much less than that. I want them. So consumers have driven that price as well, haven't they, to this sort of rock bottom?
Well, there's the parallel, isn't there? From the gas industry across to the heat pump industry. As you're saying, the same installation, as far as the customer's aware, unless that installer who's going to go through the integrity wants to do a quality install with a good lifetime and it's future-proofed, but it's going to cost more money than the guy down the road who's going to turn up and be gone in mid-afternoon. So it's not just this industry. Unfortunately, this industry is under the microscope at the moment, so we're taking quite a lot of flak.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we are definitely under the microscope. I mean, that's a good thing and a bad thing, I think. And it's very interesting. We think that people can team up, and obviously Lisa and I, we know the HVAC industry really well, and What? There's 50,000 F-gas engineers, I should imagine, now, isn't there?
There is about 50,000, yeah. So there's a lot of us, but not enough for us to do this on our own. And I think it goes both ways, doesn't it?
And most of them, as we know, don't want to go into domestic, but they could team up with someone, like they could team up with an installer. They've obviously got the skill and knowledge to repair if there's a compressor breakdown or something like that. So they could actually team up with a few installers, I suppose, couldn't they? They don't want to actually, I don't think, go in the homes, but they don't mind. I don't think they'd mind servicing or repairing sort of monoblock systems, would they?
I think, and again, it really varies from company to company and you know, like individual situations, but actually some HVAC engineers are interested in this and others aren't. But I think at the end of the day, we've got to accept that we're not trained or geared up to do domestic heating. We have to acknowledge that. And you guys,
there's quite a few plumbers out there that aren't trained up.
But although, you know, and you guys, although you know domestic heating, you perhaps don't really understand how a heat pump works, like the fundamentals. And, you know, we said earlier that we've just had to help the government to understand how a heat pump works. And that's the kind of situation that we're in. If the government don't really understand the essentials and like the ins and outs of it, then how do we expect the consumers to understand it? And then I think that has a knock-on effect, like you say, the installation of it. I think you have to think about it, about any sort of investment that you make. So you don't want to spend 50 grand on a really expensive car and then ask, you know, bloke around the corner to do a service on it, because when it goes wrong, you're going to be absolutely gutted. And I think you have to think of your heating system and your heat pump in that same way. It's an investment and you want the very best from it. So it's all very well cutting corners, but actually you get what you pay for at the end of the day, don't you? So it's getting that balance right, isn't it?
Is there any way that you think customers and homeowners are actually now starting to appreciate and value us as an industry? Do you think that's happening? Are you seeing that?
I think with the way the energy costs are going, it's become a no-brainer now to switch to a heat pump. I mean, we can get the efficiencies, the running costs are cheaper, and I think the inquiries from customers have changed since the new year, really. Where we could all see these rises in energy. Even if you're stuck on gas, people are really looking at ways of reducing their gas consumption. So I think there's a real drive now. Like 10 years, 15 years ago, it was heat pumps were dinner party things to show off to their friends and the rest of it. It's normal people fitting them in normal houses now.
But, I mean, that's a good point. This thing about the fuel costs has really sort of engendered this interest from homeowners. Think, well, and I always say to people, you know, most people out there can't get heat pumps straight away, but what they can do is get heat pump ready. So if they have got to have a new boiler, have one that's, like, you know, got modulation controls on it, maybe get your radiators, find out what output your radiators are at certain temperatures, you know, what output are they at 70 degrees, what output are they at delta 20, which will be your 40 degree flow rate. And then they might be able to change some of that and get a bit of heat pump ready. I mean, is that a good little tactic for homeowners, Steve?
If they've got the capital to do it, it's certainly a future-proof investment, isn't it? Rather than just keep sticking a plaster on. It's coming, and we know that. We've got, same aside, we've got installations now where we took gas out and they're actually cheaper to run. As long as you're hitting a COP of 3, electric and gas, that's the differential in the cost, it's cheaper to run. So if you're going to have an upgrade but you're not going to the heat pump, any moves you can make before that eventuality arrives at you, it's going to happen, whatever whatever way you look at it, it will arrive at your door. Energy costs can't carry on like this, can they?
No. Now, we've had the new scheme, the boiler upgrade scheme, which is a bus. That's the only way I remember that acronym. So that's just literally started. How's that going for you guys? Because I should imagine you're both kind of involved in it.
Lots of inquiries. A lot of people wanting to go forward with it. As yet, I haven't had any complete. We're putting the applications in. And somebody mentioned to me there has been some data on the amount of applications so far. I believe Ofgem are declaring 17, is it?
Yeah, it wasn't a lot, was it?
It seems quite low, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which seems a bit strange, because we're getting a message back every time we put an application in saying that they're overloaded with applications, so there's going to be a delay.
And I think there was 9,000 heat pumps registered in March at the end of RHI as well. So I think March was the busiest year month ever for heat pumps. And suddenly 9,000 were installed in March, which I doubt if some are actually installed right now. But
do we also get this question as well? So one of the things I have to make clear to people don't have to be MCS accredited to install a heat pump. They only have to be accredited if they're doing a heat pump under one of these grant schemes. You've mentioned the RHI, the Renewable Heat Incentive, and we've now got BUS. Do you find there's a cohort of people out there that just want you to go and put these in? They're not worried about you? I mean, I know your companies have MCS accreditation, but do you find that there's people that ask you? Or
yeah, that is changing. I personally don't think MCS is going to be around that. It's not going to be a long-term industry because it's changing fast. Heat pumps, every new build is going into heat pumps. None of those have got to be MCS. The $5,000, how long's the BUS scheme going to last? There was talk that they were going to rob that for insulation the other day. So
that's an interesting point. What about servicing and maintenance contracts? So these heat pumps going into these new builds that don't have to be MCS or installed by an MCS accredited company. If someone rocks up to that install 2 years later to work on it, they won't have to be MCS?
Technically, no.
No.
Don't think so. No. No.
So that's quite interesting.
Manufacturers might stipulate an annual service for their warranty, and there may be I would have thought they would ask for some sort of accredited training with the product to service the product. I'm not sure.
So that's a shift in industry in its own right then, MCS, isn't it? Because that's changing then.
MCS was never a requirement for the servicing. The service was a requirement. So just to be clear there, the installation was MCS if you were going for the grant, but future servicing just had to be in place. It didn't require an MCS installer.
Now Lisa, you do some stuff for BESA, is that right? BESA, BESA? And who else? The IOR, have I got that?
Yeah, so with the IOR, we're currently running a project, it's actually been running for 3 years now, called Beyond Refrigeration. So it's looking at like potential to save energy in the future. So like we were talking about capturing heat from things like data centres, energy centres, and then reusing that for district heating. So we've been working alongside Bays and London South Bank University to look at actually what we can do in terms of where we can capture this energy and how we can improve these processes. And a major focus of that is actually like say data centres and energy centres. So much waste heat. We're trying to translate what the government are trying to, you know, what they're sort of trying to guide us, and we're trying to translate the government guidelines into usable information to help end users know where they need to go with this and know where they need to be. I think that's probably quite a big thing is, you know, a lot of people don't know what's going on in the background, and while we might think that heat pumps are not, you know, we're not where we need to be and there's not enough information or knowledge out there, there's a lot of people working to gather and collate and advise people and hopefully, like I say, get the public up to speed to know what's actually going on and where they need to be.
It's a hard one for the public, isn't it? Because the public is obviously a very, very mixed bunch. Some of them want lots of information. They love technical information, and other people just need honest advice. They don't need to know all the technical vagary, but so being able to provide the homeowner with information about what this new system is or potentially can be. And the other problem they've got is, how do they know who's a good engineer? Because I'm well known for saying is, you know, it doesn't matter whether you've got a certificate or accreditation, that doesn't mean nothing. So there's a big problem with consumers knowing who's good at putting this stuff in, because as you two will probably agree, you know, some of this stuff does get put in quite bad, doesn't it?
MCS is no guarantee of a good installation. No, there's a massive misunderstanding about how heat pumps work. There seems to be a real desire to make them work the same as boilers, and and they're just not. I think once we can get over that, then everything's fine.
I mean, I know MCS quite well. How could they make that system better then, Steve? Because you don't mind the actual, you've been involved with MCS a long time, haven't you?
Yes, we've been pretty much from the start with MCS. They could streamline a lot of the procedures. There's certainly a lot of requirements in there that really don't make sense. They're working on it. I'll give them their credit. Since probably 2 years ago, they have been diluting it down. It was definitely top heavy on the paperwork. That's going to put off, as you were saying, massive industry for sole traders. And a sole trader can't take on 8-10 hours of paperwork a week. If you're going to get a mad push for all these £5,000 grants, that's a lot of time and a lot of paperwork. It's also a lot of money for an installer to withstand.
And once again, for the customer, this is all your time, is it? Filling out all that paperwork. They don't see that. You're not on site with your tools. That's part of what you're charging for. Who does the paperwork in your... That's you, isn't it?
It's split between myself and two office staff.
So is it Craig or is it you?
No, it's me. I'm trying to build all the QMS systems at the moment for us because we're not MCS at the moment, but we're going to get through it this summer. If I don't go mental.
I'm hearing there's lots of paperwork and hoops to get MCS accredited, but once you are, does it relax a little bit? Does it get a bit easier?
Yeah, it does. As they get used to you, your assessor, he knows, once he's seen some installations, he knows whether you're winging it, whether you're... whether you're competent with the equipment.
That's if you've got a good assessor, Steve. I mean, one of the problems has been in this industry is some of the assessors actually don't know the technology as much as you guys. I mean, I'd say quite a few assessors wouldn't know the technology. I mean, you have actually got one, I think, a good one. But we have got problems when this first started. Assessors that were coming out to assess heat pumps that may have had PV knowledge but wouldn't have a clue what they're looking at for G3 regulations when they're looking at an unvented cylinder, had no idea whatsoever. And I don't know if that's got better. Has it?
You got me there.
We'll leave that one there.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, Lisa, you are a massive advocate of getting more women into the industry. What's sort of going on in that space at the moment? How's that panning out?
I actually think it's going really well, isn't it? Do you not agree? There's a lot more women about in the industry. There's a lot of women that are willing to get hands-on now, or maybe not even so much that they're willing, but they're being allowed to. And it sounds like a silly thing to say, but when I went to college, when I was training, a lot of the guys just wouldn't let me touch the equipment.
And it's a great thing, because there's no doubt women have got an eye for detail, far more patience, and can multitask. So we're all the same. Any officer who's got a wife, they pick us up all the time. And when you get that happening in the workplace, that's why so many women have become so at the front line now. They operate faster than us. I'm sorry, but we're a bit one-dimensional.
They don't act as silly as some of my engineers, I know.
I think there is that, but also, you know, it's been widely acknowledged for a long time that innovation is driven by diversity. So we're not just talking about women. We're talking about ethnic minorities. We're talking about different sexual orientations and maybe even different social backgrounds. So, you know, there's a lot of people that lack the privilege. You know, they might not have the money to get on the bus to an interview. And we're actually missing a lot of talent there. And we have got a massive gap. You know, there's a massive skills gap. And the only way we're going to address it is actually to actually become more inclusive and to include people. And we have to build an environment where people feel welcome. And like I say, I'm sure you've seen it in your side of the industry that there are more and more women getting into these roles. And actually, they really enjoy it and they find it rewarding. And for you guys being like sole traders, you say like majority, you have that freedom to run your own business as well, which could be really appealing to someone who has to juggle being a parent as well as, you know, running a business and running a home. So it's, you know, there's lots of opportunities and actually, you know, it can work out for the best, I think.
Going on to the actual equipment, Steve, so you've been around this equipment for quite a while now. Has the has the equipment come on? A lot of people think the equipment's going to come down in price. I don't think it's going to come drastically down in price. That's just my personal opinion. Yeah, because you know, compression, vapor compression technology has been around us a long, long time, as you know, we've worked with it. Has the technology got better in the sort of the couple of decades you've been involved with it?
All technology is getting better. Heat pumps aren't a new technology, we all know that, but technology is moving so fast now, and obviously they're being swept along because they're being developed as we go forward, and they're changing so fast, and that's probably an issue we've got where we're talking about planning regulations, things like that. By the time everything gets put in place on the regulation, the equipment is miles away from that. As they're testing and moving forward, they can't keep up with it.
Have you got certain manufacturers you like?
I don't know if I'm allowed to ask that.
I do work with certain manufacturers, but other good ones are available.
So I can see we've got a couple of the Bait Talk Heat architects in the audience. We've got Damo, look. So I was going to ask if any of the audience have got any questions. And we've got MZ over there. Has anyone actually got any questions they want us to talk about? Anything specific about getting into the heat pump renewable industry? Damo over there is an expert with cylinders. So if anyone's got cylinder questions, please go and see Damo. Flow rates from a cylinder, he's an expert.
Free carpet wash with every install.
So it's a very good industry for people to get into, as we know.
Growth industry.
Is there going to be any problems? I mean, we do get a bit cynical, especially when we get old like me and Steve are. What are the problems we need to sort of focus on and sort of try and attenuate and get rid of? What are the main challenges we've got as an industry, as installers or engineers? What are the main problems?
Ooh. Getting the design right. Simple as that. Doing the maths, work it out, set it up right, commission it correctly. Away it goes, nice and efficient. If you don't do the maths and just guess, then you are just guessing.
I guess what we're saying is it's a attitude change. It's become serious. You can't just put a boiler in, because they're so sophisticated now, modern boilers, they will basically mask any issues and they will work. You can't do that with a heat pump. The other problem you got, I shouldn't really call it a problem, but no heat pump is the same. They all got their own way of wanting to be installed, different requirements, and it's easy to get caught out. Learn to install one manufacturer's product, move to another, you will get caught out. Lisa's nodding, so obviously
so that's good advice.
In the
so you
get commercial world.
Good advice, someone to get to know a particular brand really, really well. Really well, but always have a repertoire, because I know for a fact you have a repertoire. We're working on a particular job at the moment where you won't go to your main one. You're using a different one, but learn first on a.
When you're doing a job, you take the best tool for doing that job out of the box. You don't just use the same tool every time.
Si's known as a very good designer in this industry, but it's maths, Si, isn't it? Now, not everyone likes maths, so what would you advise them? I mean, this is where people can team up. You know, someone might be really good hands-on installation, and then they can team up with someone that can do the maths.
Well, I've stopped doing the maths. I just use the IMI app now. Learn how to use the IMI app, and it's all there for you. It's done. Your pipe sizing is done in seconds. That's the key thing.
Yeah, resources. I did a whole podcast. You know, courses to resources. You know, resources help us in this. Will help us in life. You know, if I want to learn how to fix something, I look up on a YouTube video and I use a resource. I don't go on a course to learn how to do it. And we've got some very good resources now in this industry, and people can use them, can't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the heat engineer software as well, I think that's coming on. That's getting developed as we speak, which will really help us with pipe sizing and system layouts and ordering bits and all that kind of stuff. It all needs to join up, really. Everybody needs to kind of work together, from architects, designers, homeowners, installers.
HTC measuring is probably a thing that's going to become more and more widespread for the hard-to-treat houses. That's fine when you go into the three-bedroom repeated box where you've got a street full. When you've got the individual houses, older houses, strange fabric makeups, different periods, I think HTC, heat transfer coefficient.
Can you do room by room with HTC? Sorry? Can you do room by room heat loss with HTC now, or is it just a whole house
it
number?
It would be the, when you've got that coefficient, then you just multiply whatever just your
back calculate
are
from there. Yeah.
It's a very accurate way of measuring heat loss.
Yeah, so that's what my company's involved in, HTC measurements. So yeah, you do an HTC measurement, which will tell you what your house needs. Once you've got that ballpark figure, you can then go into your room, do your individual calculations, and because calculations can be out quite a lot. But if you've got your ballpark figure, my home needs that. If you've oversized every room, nothing really wrong with that, because that doesn't matter. You know, if you can get the rads in for that, brilliant, because you'll get lower temperatures. But if you're way under that base part figure, you know there's a problem, because you need that back ballpark figure for your heat pump, especially. But you can use heat flux plates. I mean, you can do room by room stuff with specialist thermography equipment, and you can put heat flux plates on, so that there'll be a plate one side of the wall and then another, and it's measuring how quick the speed of the heat. But yeah, I mean,
well, we've now got a job coming on with a doctor's surgery that's been extended, added to. We've got so many different build-ups. Will HTC that one, because it's a minefield. And just going on to that, when I turned up to do that survey, it was last Friday was the hottest day. I turned up last Friday, walked into an office, air conditioning running absolutely flat out, windows open, girl sitting at the desk in a fleece. And I'm there to advise them on their energy efficiency.
Yeah.
I had to bite my tongue.
Well, I suppose it's a bit less of an important point. You know, most homeowners haven't had to think about energy efficiency. Obviously, with the bill rises, it's something they're having to think of. But it's no one sort of teaches us this stuff, do they? We just pay a bill. We all know we have a boiler, or generally we would have a boiler, and we just pay that bill monthly or yearly, whatever we pay it by. But we are becoming an important industry now, and we've talked about this before, Steve. Unfortunately, people see us as a trade. So a domestic energy assessor can go into a home, do an EPC certificate, and they're considered the expert. And I've not met any people who do EPCs that know as much as what you do, and yet you're seen as the trade, and the homeowner looks at that assessor that's just got in for like 2 hours, who's done a day's course, as the expert. And that's a barrier.
A shirt and a tie carries a lot of weight in people's perception, unfortunately.
How do you think, how do we build this thing of making our industry more valued, Lisa? Obviously you're coming from the HVAC world. You're dealing more with sort of the facilities managers who already kind of value. But how do you see this panning out where we can get homeowners to value our industry more? Or is it possible?
I think they're going to have to eventually. And, I mean, obviously you've touched on energy efficiency of homes. And with the cost of living crisis, this is going to be something that's going to come really, really important to people. We're all seeing our gas and electric bills go through the roof. But I think, again, it always seems to come back to the same things, and it's whether you can actually afford to make that change. So long term, you want to make an energy saving, but where does the money come from to make that energy saving? And actually, if you're living on the breadline, you're really living, you know, hand to mouth, you're the person that needs that help the most, but there's nothing there to actually help you. And I know there's been a number of government schemes, and I mean, you've talked about MCS, and we all know how the green homes ended up, you know, people were doing the work, and then the installers were finding it really difficult to actually get the cash back at the end of it. So you've installed the job and you're waiting months and months to get your money back because the government can't administer these schemes. And I really think it needs to be led by them. Again, like I say, it is a really complex question, isn't it? And there's no one simple answer to it. But I think energy efficiency of our homes is actually something that we should really be focusing on now. Definitely 100%. And as much as we might all get really angry with Insulate Britain or whatever, the sort of way that they're going about what they're doing isn't right, but their message is right, and that we really do need to invest in the energy efficiency. We need to insulate.
Some better marketing.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank my guests for coming on to Beta Talk. They're regular guests, so if you ever want to hear Beta Talk, you can find it on all good podcast sites, things like Spotify. You can just look it up on Google if you want. Thank you, Lisa Jane. Thank you, Steve Webster. Thank you, Si Poskett. You can follow them all on Twitter and social media. Lisa Jane, you're known as Fridge Girl.
Yeah, Fridge _ Girl. Yeah.
And you can follow Si and you can follow Steve. And if you go to stand A106, I'm going to be on there every now and then with a company called Nesta. And you can come and meet some of the really good engineers. We've got Steve Calvert's been on there this morning. We're going to have Steve there this afternoon. Si's there Thursday morning. You've got Ken Bone and Jacob Newman are going to be there on the Wednesday. So come and have a chat. And if you want to speak to some of these experts about how to get into the renewable industry, you can. So thank you very much for listening to Beta Talk. Thank you.
This episode was brought to you by Farnell, your global distributor of electronic components, products, and solutions. Visit farnell.com.